Bowl at Boyx.
Hello and welcome to Bowl at Boyx. I'm Akila Rangana. Joining me as always, Jeffrey Boycott, who's all prepped and ready to answer the questions that have come in for him. Hello, Jeffrey. Hope you've been doing well. Troubled times indeed for world cricket right now.
Yes, we thought we got rid of all that, didn't we, with the Hansi Cronier affair and one or two of the Pakistani and Indian players being involved. We thought that that had gone away, that the ICC had put security and anti-corruption people in charge, stopped them using mobile phones, etc. during the matches, and we thought it had gone away, but here we are, it's back again.
Right, Jeffrey, we'll have a question on that issue coming up very shortly on the show, but let's start off today's show with a technical query. The question is from John Sargent, who's written in from New Zealand, and John wants to know, has the footwork of batsmen always been as bad as it is at the moment? Now, John says that repeatedly one sees them hooking off the front foot, often unsuccessfully, and the extra time available when hooking off the back foot would make placement easier and indeed more accurate, not to mention airy wafting outside the off stump, which is rife today. What do you think, Jeffrey?
I think footwork is poorer today. And why is that? I think it's simply this. There's so much one-day cricket, too much, many of us think, that kids in the last 20 years or so have grown up with more and more one-day cricket. They've had a different apprenticeship to my generation. Now, we were told when I grew up to keep the ball on the floor, no wrist batting. We played, remember, which most people in certainly in Asia and other parts of the world won't know about. We played on uncovered pitches. When it rained on the pitch, it took on a different connotation. Next day's pitch might be different from a very good pitch. It might be wet and skid on. It might turn. It might do all kinds of things. So it made it vital for youngsters coming up to learn how to have a good defensive technique, so your footwork had to be good. Today, kids from an early age have to whack it, because there's so much one-day cricket, and the pitches are better than ever. They're covered with better covering than there's ever been. The pitches generally are better for batting scores, for higher batting scores than ever. So, in some ways, we are all products of our upbringing. Their first thought today when batting is to hit the ball, be inventive, score. Footwork becomes secondary. He talks about outside off stump, people wafting outside off stump. And it's true. Their footwork is many times pretty poor. But it is a result of trying to score off every ball in one-day cricket. And when they've been doing that in one-day cricket, to have to try and change to what you might say longer-term cricket, it's very difficult. Because whatever we do at sport, we practice to do things so it comes instinctively to us. And it's same with the hooking and pulling. What has happened there? The hooking and pulling without good footwork, I think that's come around because players in the last 20 years or more have had so much confidence that they're not going to get hurt. They're wearing helmets with visors, the chest pads, arm pads. So they're having a dip at it at the ball. You see tail-enders playing hook shots and pull shots. John, good question. But remember, we're all products of our upbringing. The upbringing today doesn't necessarily make better footwork. It's made poorer footwork. The game is interesting as it's ever been. Footwork, much poorer.
Right, Jeffrey, moving forward, we have another technical query. It's from Sumit, who's written in from the United Kingdom. Now, Sumit plays for a local league in London, and Sumit says that he's heard the phrase, batsman's head falling over. So Sumit wants you to please explain what this does mean for the batsman, and how can you practice to keep your head still while batting?
Well, you can't practice to keep your head still while batting. The whole phrase is a misnomer. So let me explain. What happens is when a batsman, left or right-handed, gets his foot on the wrong side of the ball. Remember, if you're a right-hander, you should put your foot on the on side of the ball so the bat can come down next to the pad and hit the ball. Now, if he gets it on the wrong side of the ball, Cook's a good example of this. He gets the foot on the off side of the ball. I know he's a left-hander, but he gets it on the off side. And then he's in such a poor purpose position with his foot that his body and his head start falling over to the offside. Now, it's his head falling over with his body in such a bad position that people say, oh, his head's falling over. But the problem that causes it is not the head, it's the feet, it's the foot. And to stop it, it's not, quote, what you say, how to keep your head still when batting. That's impossible. The problem is to get your foot correctly on the leg side, or if you're right under the left side of the ball, right? If you cook, it's on the right side of the ball, a left-hander, and the rest all falls into place. Your head will be more upright, it won't be falling over, your body won't be falling over. But it is a misnomer.
Right, Jeffrey, moving on. Up next is a question from Wayne, who's written in from Barbados. And Wayne says that he's a West Indian who has lost his hair trying to figure out the West Indian team. Now, there are two parts to his question. Firstly, he asks, what would you do with someone like Chris Gayle, who, according to Wayne, has tremendous talent, but his commitment to cricket is another matter. And just to take that forward, what did you make of the WICB's decision to cut Ram Naresh Sarwan, Narsingh Deonarain, and Jerome Taylor from the central contracts list? The first two on grounds of fitness and Taylor on his attitude. Is this the right step forward?
Well, he's given me very specifics there in his question, but I'll answer it in a general way. I wouldn't want the job. It's too difficult organising West Indies cricket. West Indies have now gone too long, a full generation producing poor cricket and very ordinary cricketers, except for the odd one or two. And it's interspersed is this poor cricket with good stuff, but the good stuff is too rare. And now trying to discipline players, make them more professional, or creating more talented players takes a bit of time. And the whole organisation of West Indies cricket and the leadership of it has to come from the top. I mean, there have been too many fallouts with the officials and the players, and that's not good. That means there's an undercurrent of distrust. So how the hell can you run anything, any business? And I honestly don't know where you go from here. Because you have so few talented cricketers in the West Indies. So when you fall out with the few you have, or you drop the ones you're talking about, like Taylor, and you don't give a central contract to the others, you know, what the hell do? You don't have that many. And unless you start from the top and organise development of young cricketers, the professionalism, the attitude, right from the word go, is going to go through. I mean, you have Chris Gayle, who's a lovely lad, talented cricketer, but he plays it in an amateurish way. Well, I'm afraid cricket's moved on a lot since then. It's much more professional. So trust me, it's not just about those specific incidents. It's a whole thing of it. I talk to the West Indian ex-players as well, and they feel distraught at the way West Indian cricket is going.
Right, Wayne, there you go ahead with Jeffrey's thoughts. Right, Jeffrey, moving on. Up next is a question from Ritif Warden, who's written in from Cape Town. And Ritif says that the Champions League is upon us, but seriously, does anyone care, is what he's asking. Granted, there's a lot of money at stake. Young cricketers get tremendous exposure. But Ritif thinks there is too much of a disconnect with the fans and the tournament, unlike, say, the Champions League in football. So he wants to know, do you agree with him or disagree?
Ritif, I agree with you. You're pretty smart. Look, I love cricket. I love all types. But I have no idea or care what is going on in that tournament in South Africa. And I don't think anybody does. There is just too much one-day cricket all over the world. The problem is, you just can't keep track of it all. And too much sameness creates apathy. That's what's happening. We need to make games tournaments special. But the problem is, TV stations all over the world are desperate to fill airtime, and cricket can fill better than any other sport, any of the top sports anyhow, 10 hours. The administrators think it's easy money, and some administrators now aren't bothered about spectators, they just want the easy money. And eventually this novelty will wear off, this apathy will increase. I mean, already at test matches, there's more test matches than ever, already we have empty or near-empty stadiums in many test matches, so it's already happened. And all over the world, it's going that way because there is just too much and the administrators are too lazy to get off the bottoms and sell the game. They just take television money. Well, one day, television might find something else that it likes better, and then I don't know where cricket will go because the way it's going is not healthy for the game.
Boyk's Question of the Week.
Right, Jeffrey, it's now time to move on to the question that you've picked as the most topical one that's coming for you this week. It's from Gyanesh Prakash, who's written in from India. And Gyanesh wants to know, don't you think the authorities, whether the ICC or the PCB, you know, the PCB has seen with bans and then, of course, revoke bans, their attitude of sweeping it under the carpet is the biggest problem with this fixing controversy. Kyanesh says that had the authorities taken some strong decisions, for example, in 2000, and set up an example before the players, these things could have been a lot different. Do you think justice will be done this time, or it will be the same old story? And specifically with the Pakistan scandal, how much blame rests with the PCB?
I'm not convinced that anything good will come out of this. So much has happened in Pakistan. You can ban somebody and they come back playing within 3 weeks. And look, you have a society which is very different. Their standards are different. Whether we like it or not, there is corruption going on. And therefore, you have these players who see this as an opportunity to better themselves and their family and make money. It's not the right way to go. And the only way, the best example I can give you, what should have happened years ago, as you say, around about 2000, is exactly what India did. India, they're sometimes criticized, but they are to be commended. Sometimes trying to bring a criminal prosecution against people is difficult to get evidence. You know people have done things, but proving it can be very difficult. And that was so quite a bit in the Hansi Kronje affair. What these national boards, what they have within their power, if they feel there is enough circumstantial evidence that various players are guilty of misconduct to do with spot fixing, match fixing, that really hurts the game, what they can do is do what India did. Don't pick those players. There were players in India that never played again. They felt did the board, and they didn't have to say anything. They didn't have to give a reason why. They just never picked them again. So their careers are finished. There's no big money playing for India. There's no big endorsement and television commercials and sponsor products. And that way, you hurt them and then get the game back on track. Look what happened in Sharjah. I went to Sharjah commentating, loved it. But there was a feeling by many people that there was quite a bit of match-fixing going on. Proving it? Nobody could really prove it. So India stopped going there. And they are a bit to be commended for being strong. Now, the PCB could do the same thing. If they feel there's enough circumstantial evidence, even if they can't bring a criminal prosecution, they could not pick these players. Full stop. Just not pick them forever. And that sends the best message ever to any young player or any other player playing the game. If you don't have to get caught, found out, and go to court and proved, it just have to be suspected enough by the authorities, and you won't get picked again. And that is the way to go, in my opinion. Now, whether the PCB will do that, or the ICC will force them, in some ways, I feel the national cricket boards in the world are in the best position ever to force the PCB, the Pakistan Cricket Board, to do something really big and stamp it out, because Pakistan is in a cleft stick. India won't play them. That's where they make the most money, Pakistan, when they play India from television rights. Secondly, they can't play international cricket in their own country. Nobody will go and play them. They need the help of countries like England, who set up test matches here, to try and help them play in a neutral country. They played Australia at Lord's and at Headingley. We lost money at Headingley trying to put on a test match for Pakistan, which they won. They beat Australia. It was fantastic. Now, they need the national boards like England to set up neutral tests for them. And so the boards like England said, no, we're not helping you unless you do something really radical and strong about spot fixing and match fixing. You know, they have an opportunity now, do the other boards, to really make it count and put pressure on the Pakistan Cricket Board.
Right, Kyanesh, there you go with Jeffrey's thoughts. Thanks so much, Jeffrey. That just about does it on this week's show. But don't forget, you can send in your questions to Jeffrey Boycott using our feedback form. And he'll be back, as always, in a fortnight's time to answer them. Until then, it's goodbye.
Bowl at Boyd's on Crick Info Talk.